I'm Bobby Williams, and you're listening to Dignity, a four-part podcast docu-series about Washington State's juvenile justice system. In this show, we are diving into the Washington State Department of Children, Youth, and Families Juvenile Rehabilitation Division to better understand the work being done. Plus, we're getting to know individuals from every level of the system. If this is your first time listening, you're catching us at the tail end. You're going to want to listen to episodes 1 through 3, then come back to us. This episode is about relationships between staff and system-involved youth, young people's capacity for growth and change, and what's driving the people behind juvenile rehabilitation work. Let's talk about it. This is Dignity. Chapter 4, Relationships, Growth, and the Why. When I arrive at Green Hill School, they buzz me through the front gate, buzz me through the front door, check my bags that I'm bringing with me, run me through an x-ray machine, and then buzz me through the second door. It is very much a secure facility. That doesn't mean it needs to be a place that's totally miserable all the time, though. When you turn on the television or go to watch a movie about adult prisons, they don't usually paint a positive picture. The guards are mean, they're corrupt, they're dumb, and the prisoners are ice-cold, hardened criminals. That's not what I see when I go to Green Hill. In a lot of ways, it is a very tough place to be, but most of what I've seen is a lot of staff and youth working together and building positive relationships. I asked Rob Ree, a resident at Green Hill, who's a staff member that stood out to him.
Staff, I would say staff, as far as staff, I would say John Speed. He's a supervisor in the building I live in, and he's also my counselor. And you know what I'm saying? Other counselors have a caseload, which is basically like they have multiple kids that they have to look after, basically. And with John, I'm his only caseload. And on top of that, he's a supervisor. So you know what I'm saying? He looks out for me more than most counselors can do. So he looks out for me on a higher level. And he really understands, like, you know what I'm saying, the predicaments I be in when I get in trouble. He's understanding. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't try to shame me or make me feel like I'm wrong in any type of way. He understands. And on top of that, he has a brother that was in prison, that's in and out of prison still to this day. And so, you know what I'm saying? He doesn't try to make my life any harder. He just tries, you know what I'm saying, make my days go by faster and easier as possible.
Yeah, that sounds like an important person for sure. In talking with different residents at Green Hill, they kept mentioning the same person.
Jose's cool. Talk to Jose.
Jose, of course, you know, he's been always there, trying to do whatever it is, you know, advocating for us, so I for sure appreciate them.
Again, Jose is the Youth Engagement Program Specialist at Green Hill. When I spoke with Jose, I asked him, why is he so successful at building positive relationships with youth?
What's his secret sauce?
I
was their age, and I realized that I zigged when I could have zagged. I could have maybe been in the same position as them. And the way I've always taken my approach with the youth is I meet them where they're at. I don't judge them for their past. And I believe in their future. And I'm just genuine. So, you know, people want to hear things straight. They want you to talk straight to them. They don't want you to tell them what they want to hear. And that's what I try to do, because they can see through you. And I think just authentic and I truly care. That's how I build my relationships.
You can be fun and cool, but you can't be a pushover at Green Hill. I asked Jose to give me his take on this.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I came back to work here, I had taken about an 8-year break from when I first came out of college to work here as a counselor. And at that time, it was super like DOC, rigid, you know, it was way different. And so I came here with that mindset. I'm just looking for things that are, you know, to go wrong, And I quickly realized that, you know, we're dealing with 23-year-olds. We're not dealing with 16-year-olds like it was then. We're dealing with people that, you know, they've been there, done that, and it's much easier to have just relatable conversations with. And that allowed me to let my guard down and just, you know, be more of a mentor type. And I realized just be fair as you can and firm when you have to be. You don't have to be, you know, I want to have as much fun as I can every single shift when I was inside the units. And it's the same thing when we're doing our classes and our groups. As much fun as I can within the rules.
What Jose was telling me seemed like a delicate balance. How can you be supportive of youth, creating a therapeutic atmosphere, while also being in a position of authority? When I spoke with Dan back at Touchstone Community Facility, he shared a few thoughts.
Yeah, a good counselor is someone coming with great boundaries and has the mindset of wanting to help the youth. And that's a tough compromise for some people. It's really easy to have strict boundaries and be punishment focused, and it's really easy to be caring for everybody and wanting the best for them and not holding accountable for behaviors that do arise. So finding that middle ground in people is the kind of the sweet spot for a counselor or any staff that works in juvenile rehabilitation.
Something that was clear throughout my interviews was that juvenile rehabilitation work can be incredibly challenging. What makes someone want to work at a secure facility or a group home or a parole office? In reflecting on this, I remembered something Ron from Green Hill had said to me.
I would say I'm just trying to find a way, you know. Before, didn't feel like there was too many ways, too many options. But as I grow old and as time passes and the more I step out of my comfort zone and allow myself to take advantage and create opportunities for myself, I feel like I'm becoming what I want to become, which I'm still not really too sure, but I feel like as I go along, it's all coming together.
Ron's words reminded me that the core idea behind juvenile rehabilitation is that youth can be rehabilitated. They can change. They can grow as people. Again, here's Jose.
I think that people can be truly aware of what they did, the impact it caused, and they can literally shift their entire philosophy of thinking to where that's a life I no longer want to live. I think really society as a whole, the way, you know, mass media presents people who are incarcerated, they don't believe that your mindset can be shifted that much. It's a hard pill to swallow. So I think by being here in the front lines and being with these youth so much and seeing how people have changed from when they first came here to year four, I'm a believer. I think they can do it.
Another component that contributes to youth changing their state of mind is that their mind is literally changing. As we know more about brain development, we're learning that your brain isn't fully developed until you're around 25 years old. Washington State has been paying attention to this. That's why facilities like Green Hill allow young people to stay there until they're 25. Felice Upton, Assistant Secretary of JR, explained it this way.
Yeah, I mean, I think many of the things we all like to pretend aren't true, right? When you're 14, your level of impulsivity is higher than most other ages. And what we see with youth ceasing to be involved with the criminal legal system as they age is that their brain fully forms at 24, 25. And so some of that impulsivity, some of that need to feel good right now, not be able to defer gratification, you age out of. We all do. We all just might be from different areas where we didn't get caught for those behaviors or where potentially it was a different kind of impulsivity. We are led by different things. And we also know that the hormone changes that occur in young people around the age that we're housing many of them, because we now house young people from pretty young age about 11 or 12 to 25 across our system, right? So at Green Hill, you might see young people who have more or less impulsivity. They're starting to age out of that phase in life where in a classroom at Echo Glen, you might have 14-year-olds who are really struggling to pay attention. They're struggling to sit in their seat. They maybe need fidget spinners, which is what we would see in a public school in most areas of the state. So I think impulsivity certainly is a cornerstone for me of what we tend to see as the brain develops.
A running theme throughout my interviews seemed to be this idea of empathy. Youth didn't end up in juvenile rehabilitation by accident. They might have been caught by accident, but there are reasons behind why they were in this situation in the first place. When I spoke with Allison Nilgen-Fritz, the principal at Echo Glen, I could tell that empathy was an important part of her work.
And the biggest thing that I always want the community to know is if you had the lives that some of these kids have had from day one, and they've survived. Yes, they might have had, they might have done things that are unsafe or are that put others at risk, to be honest, or harmed others. But these kids are survivors, and they've learned these behaviors. They weren't just born this way. And when you start to hear their stories about why they did the things that they did, there's kind of an understanding. Yes, it's not saying that I think it's okay that they did the crimes that they did, but you start to kind of put yourself in their shoes a little bit and you say, okay, I get it. Still not okay, but I get it in a way. And so I think that's also the humanizing piece of the job, because if you just looked at these young kids as these hardened criminals, we couldn't do the work that we do with them of digging down to about the why and then the rehabilitation of who they are as humans and how they look at the world. And so that's another big piece that I really try to focus on, is just the why, and then we move from there.
I asked Allison what message she hoped people would take away from this podcast series.
I want the community to see the humanity of our kids and see the people who work here as people who are doing, they're doing great work, and that this is an awesome place to work. And we need more people to come and want to come join our community here. And that mainly that are, I hope that kids eventually believe that they are going to make change here. And there's people who care about them who are here. And if the community knows that and we spread that word, it's not so scary.
Those were the answers I needed to understand why people worked in juvenile rehabilitation. They believe that with the right support, a young person can turn their life around. This work was their way to be a piece of that change. The work is being done on an individual level, but it also impacts greater society. Here's a thought Representative Callan shared with me.
I think it goes back to one of the statements that you said in terms of intrinsic value, right? If we put people first, and we remember that youth that are engaged with juvenile justice are youth. And the why behind their engagement with juvenile justice matters, and how they perceive themselves, how they identify themselves, and the value that they put on themselves is going to drive their future. And if we do anything that devalues that ability or for them to see themselves in a different light than the latest action that they've taken, then it's not going to hurt just this individual, which is terrible. It hurts society. It hurts every aspect of who we are. It's not who Washington State is. It's not who we are as individuals. It's not who we want to be. And I think we build systems that support people, then we build systems that will get better outcomes for everybody and give them their best chance to thrive.
Back at Green Hill, I thought about all the people I had spoken with during this project. While juvenile rehabilitation wasn't a perfect system by any means, there were a lot of people trying their best to make it better. These youth are in a tough place in life, but they have the power to create a positive future for themselves. As I was finishing up my interview with Robbery, I had one last question to ask him. Do you have any like ideas or thoughts you want to share with anyone who might be listening to this?
I would say move on from, you know what I'm saying, your wrongs, and don't show too much, you know what I'm saying, sympathy to yourself, and keep on going, you know what I'm saying? And just believe in yourself. And you know what I'm saying, work harder every day to become somebody that you want to be. Elevate yourself.
Awesome. Thanks for doing this interview, Killer. Yep. This has been part 4 of 4 of our podcast docu-series titled Dignity. I've learned a lot from this project, and I hope you did too. I want to thank the people at the Washington State Department of Children, Youth, and Families Juvenile Rehabilitation Division for supporting this project and all the access they gave me. I also want to thank everyone who took the time to sit down and do an interview with me, especially Ron and Robbery. This podcast has been a true journey, and it's been an honor to work with all of you. I mean that. Again, thank you, Smoke M2D6, for the incredible music. Until next time, thank you for listening. I'm Bobby Williams. Peace!